to learn more? Does PRN help you to see inside yourself, to be yourself, to grow and to do? The truth is, we all need each other to be, to grow, and to do. So, we are asking that you check out the PRN.fm. The Progressive Radio Network, PRN.fm.
Quandary here. That's Dexter Gordon and Johnny Griffin. The tenors, the titans of the tenors, taking the lead live at Carnegie Hall in 1976 with Blues Up and Down. George Cables on piano, Rufus Reed on bass, and Eddie Gladden on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrecht Lead, and what a day I'm having. I have to laugh because I'm so close to crying. I had a variety of noisemakers today. Everything that could make noise was being used and was making noise. And, of course, I joke all the time and say that whenever there's something to be done that makes a lot of noise, they usually start right under my window. And it was a cacophony of noises, various noises. But it seems like they might have taken a break for the moment. So I'm happy for that. You're happy for small things. Well, I should start off with a little observation here, and it's something that's developing. Mitt Romney has come out full blast against Donald Trump, blaming him mostly for the tenor of the campaign, saying that it's has basically created a lot of hatred and getting people very upset. It's very angry. And it is not doing the Republican Party any good. So he came out with a blistering broadside against Donald Trump today. And I believe that we're seeing the escalation in terms of who is taking aim at Trump now, it's getting higher and higher. So we have Mitt Romney today having his say, blaming Trump mostly for the state of affairs in the United States today, especially as it relates to these political campaigns and the conduct of these campaigns. That should send a signal. The criticisms are mounting, and they're mounting from people who are also getting higher and higher on the spectrum. They are very worried about where Trump is going and how he's been conducting his campaign and how he's been behaving, essentially, even as a president of the United States, and dragging the office through the mud, dragging the Republican Party through the mud. And the good thing that we should always remember to say, they are out in the open about it. They're not hiding it. They were hiding it before because, of course, everybody's embarrassed. Trump has embarrassed himself, his family, the party, everybody who thought that he would have done something fantastic with the party, created a room for it to grow, brought it into the new world, if you will, and energized it with new people joining it and creating an excitement about the Republican Party. But instead, we having more and more voices coming out in the open saying, this is not what we are accustomed to as Republicans. And this president is doing a great disservice to the country by conducting himself the way he's conducting himself, and also by taking some really dicey actions, very dicey, that would cause anybody who has a sincere desire to remain Republican and what it stands for, whatever it is that is. But there are people who take this very personally, and they can't believe what Trump has done to the party and continues to do. So we have to say, we have to also say that while we are clear that Trump is not the best person for the job as president of the United States, we also have to admit that there are criticisms. They are very, very straight ahead. They're untarnished. They're raw, and they are pertinent. And it is something also to be said that in the middle of all of this, we still have an effort by many Republicans to reclaim the party or to reclaim some kind of dignity to the party. So it's a signal that they're hurting terribly. They're very embarrassed by Trump, and they cannot stand witnessing any more of this, what he has done and continues to do. It's a travesty. The only person who doesn't get it so far is Donald Trump and, you know, his close associates. But just about people, the people who you would place some kind of stake in, whether you agree or disagree with them politically, you have to give them credit for the fact that they are beginning to speak out. They're making it very clear they are not part of this Republican Party. They don't know this Republican Party that Trump is presenting and that Trump is heading. They're not part of that. So something has to be said about that. And it is an honorable thing to do, to be publicly forthright about the concern that they have. Today is the second day of what should be an intensive interview and screening session between members of the Senate Judiciary Committee and Amy Coney Barrett, who President Donald Trump is pushing to be selected to serve a lifetime appointment on the U.S. Supreme Court. As you know, she was pegged to replace the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died recently. Well, here too, there are problems. The intention was to kind of bogart his nominee through the process and to, you know, for people to recognize, I am the titular head of the Republican Party. This is who I want to nominate. So rubber stamp it and let's get it over with. It's not the most diplomatic way to go, but this is where Trump went with this nomination. But you can see there's resistance to it, especially in Congress, where people are saying, well, wait a minute, this is not the way it usually works. Surely somebody would have to nominate her, and Trump has taken on that responsibility. He has let it be known that Miss Barrett is his candidate, the person that he wants to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg with. Okay. But then it comes with a number of other messages. Because simply because he wants this doesn't mean that everybody has to go along with it. There's a process. The process has been in place long before even he got to the White House. This is the established process. People are identified and then they're called to be interviewed about a range of things having to do with law, their attitudes toward the law, and their mindset. So that's what's going on today. They're asking her questions, pertinent questions. Some people seem okay with answers, but you definitely see that some of the people asking questions, like Senator Barbara Feinstein of California, just not feeling Miss Barrett at all. And the more she pressed for some answers, especially relating to abortion, the more she started showing her, she was just fed up with the same old answers and people playing games. Answer the question and stop playing games with the old, you know, ring around the rosy. Well, what would you do if XYZ? And then the person comes up with an answer. Well, as you know, we have to take into consideration, look, this woman has been on the U.S. Supreme Court for donkey years. You don't have to lecture her about what it is you have to do. You answer the question. But there's this dodging going on. And you could see Feinstein is being very annoyed about it. So this continues today, and it continues through to tomorrow. And this is the other part that's getting people very upset. This should not be a rushed job. Donald Trump wants it rushed because he has plans. He wants to be able to claim victory for appointing yet another conservative to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's a woman at that, and he's on the ball. And he believes that if he's able to make this announcement before the election, that he would have scored big time points, because it's tantamount to him, you know, delivering on a promise that he's going to get a great replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. This guy is just a wrecking ball. But people are going along with it. I would have imagined that if Ms. Barrett had such a high sense of propriety, she would not get enmeshed in all of this at all and be pulled over here and tugged over there and becoming a, you know, just a figurehead. She's becoming a show and tell piece. It's very, very embarrassing. But she's going along with it because, after all, it's a huge post. It's a lifetime appointment on the nation's highest court, and by a president who only recently really went totally out of control, but before that was very much admired because he's a can-do guy. He wants to get things done. But this is not the way to do it. This is very bad business. And it leaves a nasty taste in people's mouths. I can't for the life of me figure out why, if she is so courageous herself, I'm talking about Ms. Barrett now, if she is so courageous and so steadfast, she should just basically indicate that she does not need any further tending. She could manage. However it turns out, it turns out. But she does not need to be given instructions by the president, because as a judge, she ought to know that it comes across that she's already owned. She's already taking orders as to how she's to vote on any major issue coming before the U.S. Supreme Court. She's compromised, and she's okay with it. That's sad. But then we see the mounting opposition against Trump. So she will have to understand that if she is comfortable with being Trump's person on the U.S. Supreme Court, if it should turn out that way, that she is approved, look at the opposition. A whole bunch of people are in opposition to the president right now, which means it will rub off on her. So she wouldn't gain anything by being very cooperative, because you're nominated by the president. I mean, retain some of your dignity and your independence and your credibility. It's very sad to see, but this happens all the time. So that's the question I'm asking, the first of two questions I want to deal with today. And that is, how do you place Donald Trump's campaign right now in the scheme of things? Is he getting closer to where he wants to be a winner in this election? Is he being, how should I say, chastised even by his party? Does he care about the mounting opposition? Will he be able to survive it? Will it get more intense as time goes by? And there isn't very much time left. So what are we looking at here? We have these seats that have to be filled, this particular seat that has to be filled. And there's some observations you may want to make about that. What will the U.S. Supreme Court actually look like when people are approved? And the folks who have done the interviewing think that, okay, we could live with these people and we can start the U.S. Supreme Court again after Ginsburg's death. 888-874-4888. What is going on in your mind about where the country is right now? I mean, this was very startling today to have Mitt Romney come out as forcefully as he has. He was mincing absolutely no words. He was clear. He blamed Trump specifically for the deterioration of standards in the White House, in the U.S. Supreme Court, and in all of the institutions. The general feeling is that this president has dragged the institutions that have been depended on so far to maintain, you know, the sense of what this country is about, to protect it, to maintain it through a fair and just application of the law. And here we are. We have a lawless president encouraging people to break the law. He himself is breaking the law. And the country is going to hell in a handbasket as far as they see it. And I've commented it about it myself. The United States has come to a point of, you know, that would cause people to worry. Who is going to be in charge here? And everybody taking their cues from this out of control president, what will we have as a working template for how this country is to be governed? That is a big, big question right now. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to express your view on the subject. We should all be worried. We should all be worried. This is not a simple matter of who you like or who you don't like. It is about a country unraveling. And the worst part of it is the person at the center of it, of the chaos, of the disintegration, is none other than the President of the United States. Who controls him? Who opposes him, and to what degree would any opposition make its mark and persuade him to, I mean, my mother used to say to my brothers, pull up your socks. Who is going to compel him to pull up his socks? And is it worth it? How does it feel living in a country where people have to constantly apologize for the president's conduct and behavior, his decisions? They don't know what else he is likely to do, because he likes doing things with a surprise. And you get the feeling that we've lost a lot of ground, not just in the United States of America, but in the world community of nations. We have lost a lot of ground. Gwen from New York. Hello, Gwen. You're on the air.
Hi, Yatrice. I've been listening to as much of the hearings as I can for this Amy Coney Barrett. And one senator just spoke that I would encourage everyone in the audience, if you can pull up his speech later on. This was Senator Sheldon Whitehouse from Massachusetts, who gave such an interesting scenario of what is going on right now behind the scenes with the courts, and how 80-0 decisions have been made in favor of trying to get to take away trial, jury trials, and other kind of mandating for suppressing the vote. And the woman behind the scenes who is writing a lot of these papers in this group is the woman who was very instrumental in nominating this candidate. So I didn't get to hear all of it, but it was so compelling to me. And unfortunately, I can't remember everything that got said, but I just think that everybody should listen to that, because the courts are already so unbelievably compromised because of the dark money behind the court system, which is directing these five justices. It's always these 5-4 decisions, which have been 80 decisions in total that they have won, 80-0. So the five have won, the five justices, which are right-leaning justices, have all won. And I don't see things getting a lot better with this woman coming in. That's not the question today. I think you're asking, how is the country going to fare? Well, I don't know how they're going to fare or when they're going to fare. I mean, I told you yesterday, I feel like we're not going to fare. I think that we're going to start splitting at the seams when the elections start to get, when the election day happens and the count starts coming in. And I don't think that Trump is just going to step down. And I think that that's where you're going to see even more chaos than you already have. I think there's lots of stuff planned behind the scenes. And there's also a lot of things that he's planning behind the scenes, like martial law. I think that he's planning martial law, which is really scary. And I think, you know, I went to church this week, and the minister said something that really stuck in my head. And she said that you're responsible for, if you see, if you witness a lie, not to go along with that lie, even though everyone else is. And if you're asked to take a bribe, you should not take that bribe, because it will definitely lead you to start thinking in another way. I mean, I guess the bottom line is that don't do the go along to get along. And yet so many people in our country are doing just that. The biggest example of the go along to get along are the people that are our legislatures. You know, I'm pretty sure, even though Lindsey Graham is a jerk in every single way, I'm pretty sure that he knows that Trump is out of his mind. And yet he's thrown his total reputation, he's thrown his total weight behind Trump, which legitimates him. And so many other people in the Republican Party have done exactly the same. They capitulated to him. They capitulated to a 5-year-old screaming brat who doesn't know his head from his backside, and they are the ones that allowed us to go down this rabbit hole. And they should have known better, and they should have stood tall. They should have said, no, we're not going to go there. Even if you're the president, we're not going there. Because when they did that, then everybody else started doing the same thing. It does matter. It does matter if the president is not wearing a mask. It does matter, because everybody else at the bottom is watching. All the people on the ground are watching that, and they're not going to do it either. So, you know, We see that the president is basically given the green light to do whatever you feel like doing. You don't have to have laws. You don't have to follow the rules. And you lie all the time, and lying is a good thing now. I mean, it's just everything's been turned on its head. And I don't know that bringing a different president in is going to change that. I'm not even sure if Biden wins. I don't even see that it's going smoothly. I see that it's being contested. I see that you'll have gangs in the street that are prepared to go and fight the president's battle. That means that if they're out there fighting, that the army could also get called in, and that could be an even bigger problem, because, you know, it's never been a popular thing for the army to go after the nation's people. So I don't think we're going in for an easy, I think we have a rough road ahead of us. And I just want to say that on packing the court, I do think that if Biden gets in and this woman, Barrett, gets in, that we should have the court packed. And I don't care what they say. There's no law that says you can't, that you can't have more justices than nine. And we'll never have any kind of fairness in this court if she gets in and it's a 6-9 all the time. There'll never be any cases that the liberal side wins. So you need to have more people in the court in order to make it more fair. And if they call that packing, I just call that making it fair. It's not fair right now the way it sits. It was supposed to be 4-4 in one swing vote. So that's my personal opinion and my personal feelings.
But wait a minute. This isn't the U.S. Supreme Court. They're not supposed to be talking about who is Republican and who is Democrat. Is there a Republican decision or a pro-Democrat decision? It's supposed to be a lawful decision. And we are way deep into this partisanship at this moment, and we can't get out of it. What has to happen? What else must happen for people to really stop and say, well, wait a minute, we crossed the line a long time ago. We need to recalibrate, we need to reevaluate, because we are way down the road from where we should be.
I don't know what could happen, because we've gone so far down that I don't think you can just change your leadership and go back up. There's lots of people. You know what's really the most shocking to me? There's lots of people in America that 100% believe in denial, and they believe in denial so much that they're going to vote for this president, and they would endorse him, and they would back all every single lie he's talked about. And this is, I think, more scary for me than having Trump as a president, is knowing people in my family that voted for him, and they, I know that the guy is lying. I know that they know that. They have to know that. We all got raised with the same mother. Are you telling me that they can't tell the difference? I mean, and yet it's this wave across this country and maybe across the world that if you just believe in deniability hard enough and long enough, that all those lies will become what's true. But it seems so fundamental to me and so evil. And I just keep thinking about the Bible, too. I'm not a religious person, but I do think about the stories in the Bible and the things that get brought up when it comes to just teaching you what's right and what's wrong. And it's pretty clear, you know, that there's a lot of doctrine that supports telling the truth. And so we've decided it's more comfortable just not to tell the truth anymore. So let's just not tell the truth. And if we say the lie, you know, enough times, that eventually that'll make it true. I mean, even with global warming, we have decided, we have spent billions of dollars on studies that tell us there's no such thing as global warming, because we would rather not know about it than face what is going to happen or change anything. So we have people that are college scholars. We have doctorates. We have all kinds of professors that have written papers to tell you that what's happening isn't actually happening. Of course it's happening. And so it seems like Trump is just the next piece of this. But it's really, really shocking to me how many people would prefer just to live in denial and pretend that, you know, Trump is not a racist and these things, all these lies that he tells are not a problem. And I don't see how even if he leaves, you pick yourself up, dust yourself off and say, let's go back to normal again, or let's go back to the way it was. It's been corrupt for a long time, but it's so corrupt and so brazenly corrupt now that I think it's almost like we look like an insane society, you know. But maybe we're not, because remember, you know, when Nero fiddled while Rome burned. We can understand now how that happened.
Wow.
And you know what else we can understand? We certainly, as Americans,
do you feel yourself reacting? I mean, to this personally, do you feel that you're reacting to this in a way that you didn't react to any other president before.
Yes. Never saw anything like this ever. I was thinking on my way home today, I was thinking, it is so crazy that I am buying like a Biden poster and putting it in my car. I mean, whoa, is this, am I the same person I was, 6 months ago? But I am so worried that he's going to get another term. And I'm telling you, it's not because I like Joe Biden. It's because I just think we've gone far enough down this path. We have to start turning it around. And I don't think that, I don't think bringing Biden in is going to just turn things right around. But I do think it'd be a beginning of turning things around to not keep going down this. I mean, this is such a bad moral place. It is so immoral. I have to say, it's even satanic to me. I think that he's such a bad person. But I look at all the people that are representing him, and what does it really mean? It reminds me of when Giuliani used to say that New York City was dirty. He wasn't, the city wasn't dirty like he was talking about, and the places that were dirty when he was the mayor were always dirty, while he was the mayor. What he was talking about, it was code for the city is less black and less Hispanic. That's what he was talking about, and that's how white people heard it. So white people routinely would tell me, but the city is all cleaned up now. And that was code for Giuliani's gotten rid of so many populations that are not white. That's what it's code for. And it just kind of reminds me of that, this the same thing going on in a bigger context, so many people now, I think, are clinging to Trump so hard because they are secretly and overtly really, really racist. And it's really uncomfortable for them to share the country with other people that are not white. And so they're getting, they're just posturing themselves. And they're going to say all these things about Trump that are not true because they want to cling to this one little thing they have. And that is that Trump is a racist like they are racist, and he's going to fix it for them. And that's an unbelievable thing. That is unbelievable to hang all your decisions on and say that you're moral and say that you're a Christian. I mean, I even had this fight with a friend of mine yesterday. She wanted to bring up some crap about one incident that happened with some black judge or something. And, I just wouldn't go down the road with her. And I said, I just don't judge people like that. I said, I'm not going to use race to judge anybody. If you're looking for something, you can find something bad in every race, in every religion, in every creed. If that's what you're looking for, that's what you can find. But that isn't what makes a person bad or good or anything. That's just the way things are. I mean, you need a much bigger scope to be looking at things with. So I think a lot of people who are very uncomfortable with any kind of change are very comfortable with Trump. He's going to take them back to, or so he says, the 1950s, and he's going to let them be un-Christian in their own way. That's a very un-Christian thing to do, is to be racist. And he's going to tell you you're a good guy for it. You're still a good guy, and you're a family. You got good family morals, and you're doing everything the right way. And I think people are very comfortable with that. A lot of white people anyway.
Well, let's see what Mitt Romney's remarks today, what impact it will have with, especially within Republican circles.
Hearings. I don't know what he said.
This is a whole different
case. I missed the beginning of the show. I was sorry. I was listening to the other thing.
Oh, no, but you can find it. I mean, just go on and find it, because I'm sure they'll be playing this over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
It was quite a remarkable statement that he made. Thanks for calling in and spending some time with us explaining. You broke it down nicely, and I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patrice.
Thank you. 888-874-4888. We are in a very precarious time as a nation. And you can distill that downward and say, as individuals, I'm sure we have an entirely different disposition toward what it means to be a citizen, what it means to be a voter, what it means to be a person of color. All these things are now beginning to present themselves in a different way so that we cannot ignore them. These are the issues, and I agree with Gwen on this, we've been ignoring these things. And here comes Trump. He's in your face because he's so confident that what he believes and what he wants to do and the changes he wants to make are so in sync with popular opinion and popular approval. And of course, we should take into consideration the fact that he's not, you know, he's got quite a few screws missing in his own head. But we are becoming increasingly aware that where we are as a nation is not a good place. Russ from West Palm Beach, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
Hi. I was just listening to the previous caller that called in, and, you know, I just want to point out front that I am on the other side of the argument. So okay. It's not that I love Trump or anything. It's just that it's funny. You know, I listened to the woman and she was making her case and she went through a whole number of different issues. And I just thought, unbelievable. She's bringing up going along with the lie and how we just sit back and if we, you know, she went to church and if you witness a lie, you shouldn't go along with a lie and all these different examples. And I said to myself, I could think of things that are very obvious in the public square that I feel the left is ignoring that are lies. And it's just, it's amazing how we each take sides. It's quite amazing to me. I mean, just looking at it as you would have, as though you were a scientist and you listen to someone on the left who's enthusiastic and articulate and they're trying to express their point of view and you hear them and they sound level-headed, they sound intelligent, and you hear them make their case, and then you hear someone on the right and you can hear them, they're level-headed, they're intelligent, but the one on the left will view the one on the right as being a total lunatic. And the one on the right will listen to the one on the left and say, wow, they're total lunatics. And it reminds me of a Star Trek episode, and maybe they made this to demonstrate just what I'm describing. The Captain Kirk was there, and there was these two aliens running around the universe trying to kill one another. And they finally got them together in a spaceship, and they were facing one another, and he was trying to, you know, act as a mediator between the two to maybe solve this century-long problem. And one guy, the one alien, looked at the other alien. He looked at him and he goes, can't you see why I hate him? And then the other guy would go to Captain Kirk, well, yeah, but if you look at him, can't you see why I hate him? And the only difference between them was one species was a dark color on one side and a white color on the other, and the other guy was the mere opposite. And that's all they were. But all they could do is hate one another. And their explanation was, it's obvious, don't you see? And I thought that was a great example of the kind of psychology that's involved in the polarization of right and left. So my example would be, and I'll just offer one example about why I find the people offering examples of why the other side is wrong. One thing that I find frustrating about the left is I always suspected that all of this stuff about Trump conspiring with the Russians to get Hillary to lose the election and all these investigations and the impeachments and all this stuff going on and on for years and years. I always thought that was absurd. I never believed it. And now we have these documents coming out that are deep. Yeah, go ahead.
What you were talking about is slightly different from what we were talking about, and that is, just to say, we are at an untenable place right now as a nation. We cannot proceed this way and expect success. And we cannot deny that because Trump is our most recent president, and a rather contentious one, he stokes hatred. He's not a good example of a president. And he accounts, whether we want to admit it or not, but he has had 4 years of creating chaos, even more chaos than we had. And just, leaving it to whoever it is to fix it, if at all anybody should fix it. He is, and I said it from 4 years ago, he is seriously mentally ill. And he needs to be someplace getting treated. I'm not the only one who's saying it. We had two major psychological associations made up of professionals, and they issued two separate reports saying duty to warn. Nobody's listening. And a nation is going to hell in a handbasket, and the nation is also now indulging in fantasy that it's not happening. It's just people who don't understand Trump, hate his guts for no reason, and they are on the polar opposite side of Trump just trying to make things better for the country.
I mean, as far as leaders being mentally ill, I think if you go back through history, you'll see that accusation being meant.
We have the example right now in front of us. We don't have to go back.
I'm just saying that's a common accusation that's made. It's a common accusation that's made. I'll grant you certain characteristics of his personality, the narcissism, the tendency to be oversensitive to criticisms and things like that. I mean, but if you look at the human race and you look at who was the artist, was it Michelangelo that cut his ear off? Was that him or was it some other famous artist? There's a lot of neurotic and even psychotic behavior that seems to be exhibited by people who get in these extreme positions.
We are talking about the president of the United States. You don't need to get more expansive. We have a specific reference point, and we need to understand that. We need to deal with that.
You're being subjective, okay? I just pointed out a few psychological characteristics. I don't think that disqualifies you. I don't think it disqualifies you by being a narcissist. I just don't think so. You're going to have something more serious than that. But just to finish my example, because I don't think you'll ever hear anybody bring it up on your show.
I have several more people who want to talk. So if you could hold it until the next time that we come back to each other, you'd get more time to talk. But I really can't ignore the line that I see waiting to talk. So thank you very much, Russ, for your call. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Nutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Thank you. I did not hear what the senator said this morning in relation to Donald Trump. But the only thing I would say, is that to be consistent and to be functioning with integrity, if he really believes what he said this morning in relation to Trump, then I wish he had taken the position that the nomination of this Supreme Court justice should not move forward. He would have been number three, and then the threshold for the Democrats would have only been one more. The fact that he did not oppose her nomination made the threshold for the Democrats a lot harder. So I have to say I am not impressed with his, you know, Johnny-come-lately rebuke of the president, because he could have certainly stopped this nomination dead in the tracks. He could have made stopping it much easier. But the other thing that I have to say is that, you know, we're dealing with someone who is no better than a petulant child who lacks self-control and just must get his way all the time. And so when you talk about his motivation, and when he wants, number one, because he lacks such self-control, he must win everything all the time. You know, I was looking at some of the cartoons yesterday when it was reported that he wanted to hide this Superman suit under his shirt and then just strip it open. And I said, how ludicrous, but that's who we're dealing with. But what's dangerous about him is that he has normalized overt racism to the point where, and I don't know, I can't remember who coined this phrase. It's not mine, so I can't take credit for it. But if you can convince the poorest white man that he is better than the highest black man, then you can pick his pockets all day long. And that's what we're dealing with here. You're familiar with New York. There's a Green Acres Mall, which is the boundary between Nassau County and Queens, New York. And yesterday, you should have seen there was a big Trump rally that was held in the parking lot in front of a Target. And there were hundreds of people in this parking lot. Overt racism is an issue all over the world. So it's not unique to the United States. It certainly is not unique to Donald Trump. It's just that it is now overt.
Out in the open. Well, we will see if we get more people expressing concern about where the country is going and where the country is going as a result of the direction of Donald Trump. That is really the connection. It's not only that the country is going in a particular direction, but that he is the director of the direction the country is going in. Thanks, Patricia, for your call today. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. David? Okay. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
Oh, you know me. Me and my phones. We're hanging. I take your point about Donald Trump and the way the country is leaning. But I think we, like I said yesterday, I think we get caught up in the puppets and we don't blame the puppeteers. Donald Trump didn't happen out of nowhere. The potential for an individual like him to come to power in this quote-unquote democracy existed. And we've had different manifestations of him throughout the presidential history, from what Bush did to some of the things that Obama did, not by comparison, but I'm just saying what we've allowed ourselves to believe. And the problem is not so much him insofar as what he's doing, because he's a showman, he's a conman, he's been that way. If you lived in New York and you had any dealings with real estate, you know about this guy and how he used to play games like this. The problem is, if we call ourselves a democracy, if we call ourselves vigilant citizens, how could an individual like this rise to the highest office in the land with such behavior? with such obvious mental defect, with such obvious racism. And that bespeaks who we are. And we got to stop looking outside of ourselves and eat the bitter pill that we allowed this to happen. We allowed a man who should have a political novice who has no precedent, no idea, no aptitude for civil service to rise to the highest office in the land. And this is what we get. And sometimes you get what you pay for. And this is what we get. As far as internationally, I read like 2 or 3, 4 newspapers a day trying to stay abreast of what's going on. And internationally, this country looks like a joke. China is eating our lunch, as they say. And the Belt and Road Initiative by the Chinese government and President Ping is making inroads into places in this world which have never been made before. And they're building the infrastructure. So in a lot of countries, America's even out of the equation now, because it's not who has the biggest stick. It's who has the biggest economic inroad into this world. And as long as we have leaders who are foolish, obnoxious, and basically clowns, we're always going to be behind. And we're going to be written out of history. Empires fall all the time.
Yes, they do. But it is something to be in the moment as it happens. And you see it happening, unraveling before your very eyes. And it's as if time stood still. Nobody else could see it but you. You begin to feel that something is wrong with you.
Well, no, it doesn't sit well with me. I mean, I believe other people see it. I just believe that it's reached a point to now. You've got to let it fall before you can start to build. There's too much corruption. There's too much disruption. There's too much animus to even contend with. You know, that's why I always say, try to be hyper-local. Try to concentrate on your own environment, your own local politics, because that's where landmark decisions can be made, and that can put a bearing on the federal government. Historically, even in Canada, national health care didn't start off as a federal movement. It started off in the provinces, which are the states, comparison with the United States. And as each province adopted a free form of health care, the state was compelled to bend because it was a majority of people. The majority of people in this country want health, want some type of government-funded or free health care. Polls have shown it, but we can't get it. Why? Because we're depending upon the machinations of a state mechanism that is beyond the pale. And all the people involved in it are caught in their own world.
Afraid, Ed, because we're out of time. But I want to thank everybody for contributing so meaningfully today. And let's keep the conversation going, because this is the other part that I regret, that we aren't talking to each other about these things. And this is where the change should occur. We should be talking to each other. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. And we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.